flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hi, everyone. This is Martin Willis with Podcast UFO. Welcome to episode number 41 with Simon Sharman from the UK. He's actually created an e-petition for disclosure in the UK. And, you know, he was kind of influenced by Stephen Bassett. And so I took a few minutes and had a conversation with Stephen Bassett, and here he is now. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
I am just fine.
So you have quite an event coming up. And I'm sure most people out there who listen to this podcast are already aware of it, but let's talk a little bit about it. First of all, the website that was just created is called citizenhearing.org.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk about the upcoming event.
It's an unprecedented event. It's the largest compilation of witnesses ever brought together in such a format. To address this issue to the media and to the world's people. It's the citizen hearing, 40 witnesses, about half of the top researchers are top researchers, and then the other half are military, agency, political witnesses, are going to testify for 5 days, 30 hours, to former members of the U.S. Congress in a setting and with the same protocols as a congressional hearing. So it'll be the citizen hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The entire event is going to be webcast to the world. We are going to simultaneously translate in five languages.
Wow.
In addition to English. And these languages represent half the world's population. I'm referring to Mandarin, Chinese, Hindi, English, Spanish, Arabic, and also Japanese. The subscription to this webcast is available at the citizenhearing.org website. And the entire 40 hours of hearing is available for just $3.80. And then the archive of the hearing, which will be available for a month thereafter, is available for $3.80, so you can watch what you missed or review it at your leisure. So we've made it accessible to virtually everyone. In addition, we're also filming the entire citizen hearing to be part of a documentary called Truth Embargo, which will come out later this year, probably in the winter. The purpose of this event is very straightforward. It is to generate a critical mass that is sufficient to trigger a chain reaction in the political media in the United States and around the world. And by that, I mean that the media would be pushed into investigative mode. The issue itself is being covered around the world. Thousands of articles are being written every year about this sighting and that conference and other things, but what related to the ET reality. But there's no investigation. They're not asking the tough questions of the heads of state, of the heads of the military and the intelligence agencies. They're obvious questions that these people should be answering. We have plenty of evidence connecting people like Bill and Hillary Clinton and Bill Richardson and John Podesta, Leon Panetta, Al Gore, to this issue, going back to 1992. But they're asked nothing. They never have to be responsible to the American people through the media. If the press decides it's time to be as intense about this issue as it was about the Monica Lewinsky scandal or the Watergate scandal or pick a scandal, then the truth embargo will not last the summer of 2013. That is exactly what we're trying to do. And so we will present over those 5 days an enormous amount of information from very credible witnesses, very credible people. This will be a very strong group of 40 witnesses. Hopefully, the media will get the point. This is the biggest news story of all time, and they're laying down on the job. And I should also point out that the amount of evidence we'll present is still a fraction of what's out there.
That's
for
right.
Those that actually make the effort to find it.
I'm sure. Now, what type of pull would a former member of Congress have? Would they still have quite a bit of influence to make a difference out there?
No, they're not there for their influence. They are there to do their job. The last time the United States Congress held a hearing on what is easily the most profound issue in the world was 1968, 45 years ago. You know how many sightings have taken place, how many books have been written since then, how much research has been done, and yet the Congress remains silent. So we've asked former members of Congress to come in and do the job that the sitting Congress will not do. That's why the motto of the citizen hearing is, if the Congress won't do its job, the people will. And these individuals, two-term Senator Mike Gravel, seven-term Congresswoman Carolyn Kilpatrick, two-term Congressman Merrill Cook, and we hope to announce a fourth soon, these people are willing to come forward and play out the role that they played when they actually were in Congress to gather information so the government can make good policy. They're not there because they have a belief one way or the other regarding the ET issue. I don't care what their belief about the ET issue is. Simply that they conduct themselves as they would when they sat in Congress. And so we're also sending a message 12 blocks up the street from the National Press Club to the real Congress. When are you going to do your job? Mm-hmm. This is the most important issue in the world today. You are going to remain silent on this? And so you see how this event pushes a lot of buttons?
Yes.
So it's structured to generate action. It's structured to generate a response. And I think we're going to get it. And I think it's going to be a very significant summer.
For the listener out there, I mean, I'd really like to attend to see what's going on. Maybe someone will sponsor me out there. How could the listener actually see some of this part of it or all 5 days of it?
Well, just like a regular congressional hearing, the seating is, there's no charge. The seating is first come, first seated. We have capacity for about between 200 and 250 people. Mm-hmm. And so people show up, they get to sit.
Can you name some of the people that will be testifying?
Absolutely. We're still putting the witness pool together, and we haven't announced the schedule yet. But some of the top researchers in the world will be there. Stanton Friedman, Linda Moulton Howe, Donald Schmidt, Kevin Randall, Dr. Roger Lear. In addition, we'll have military witnesses, such as Jim Peniston and John Burroughs of the Bentwaters case, John Callahan of the FAA case. From South America, we have Dr. Anthony Choi, Colonel Ariel Sanchez, Colonel Oscar Santa Maria. We also have witnesses, military witnesses, such as Jesse Martel, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, Paul Hellyer, the former defense minister of Canada, Nick Pope of the United Kingdom. That's a taste.
Wow, that is great. This is a huge venture, and let's hope that this will actually really make a difference this time. And thanks so much for the work you're doing, Stephen.
Yeah, Martin, let me encourage your listeners to please spread the word about the webcast. Those who participate in the webcast are helping to see that more hearings are taking place. And, of course, so they can participate. The link is, the webcast is at citizenhearing.org. Spread it through the social media, Twitter and Facebook and what have you. Also, I want to announce that we have created a foundation called the Citizen Hearing Foundation, a 501(c) nonprofit. And we are accepting donations from anywhere in the world to help us put on more citizen hearings. This is a very powerful truth advocacy tool. It's not been done at this level before. This is unprecedented. If we have the funds, we'll put on more hearings of this type in order to address the issues that the mainstream media and the political figures will not touch because it's too controversial or it just makes them uncomfortable. The citizen hearing on disclosure is just the beginning.
Great. Thank you very much, Stephen.
You're welcome, Martin.
So, Michael, what did you think about Stephen Bassett's talk there?
I have to admit, I'm a little bit intrigued by this. He probably will get my $3.80, so I can kind of sift through that myself. And I think it's very cool that he's going to be doing it in so many different languages.
Yeah, that's great. And, you know, a couple of naysayers out there, there's always naysayers. Someone is upset that the former congressional members are being compensated. I don't see any issues with that myself. I mean, they're asked to sit there and listen. It's not like they're going to get this huge amount of money to sit there and not do anything. That's my opinion. And the other thing that naysayers are saying is that this probably won't do anything or change anything. And I just want to comment with that with a question. Are we supposed to do nothing?
I think that's a really good point. I also think, you know, when you attack something so quickly before it comes together, it's almost as if it's something to be afraid of if it's not your point of view. I mean, if he gets half the number of witnesses he is claiming with the background and the gravitas that he's stating they have, it's going to be a very interesting collection, you know, of evidence and witness testimony, and that's going to be hard to ignore.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's a good thing.
We'll lead the news off today with strange lights in Morehouse Parish, Louisiana. And a Morehouse Parish, Louisiana man spotted a strange light in the sky Monday night, and his footage ended up on the local Fox affiliate. Despite the fact that it has all the factors that invite ridicule, such as shaky footage of a light in the sky, a rural resident making the sighting, a yard full of goats, and even April Fool's Day, the Fox 14 team treats the report with respect, even attempting to eliminate the weather balloon and other possible explanations. You can check out the report for yourself through the link in our show notes.
I looked at the video, and I could see why it was so intriguing. It really does seem to change color. Yes. A debunker could certainly pick apart this thing and the goats and, you know, all that stuff. The guy seems like a nice enough guy. He doesn't seem like he's trying to pull anyone's chain or anything like that. So, anyway, I give him that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think I could pick apart the footage, but they seemed genuinely interested. And I think what was really perhaps the most important thing is here finally is a local news report without the X-Files theme song or a crazy UFO graphic or anything like that, and just a really genuine report. And they even did try to eliminate some things. I was a little bit shocked, frankly.
Oh, when they said about the weather balloon. Yeah, it was a weather balloon doesn't flash at night and stay in one place, really.
Okay, next up we have the London UFO Museum lacks funding. Unfortunately, an effort to raise money for a London-based UFO museum is falling well short of its goals. The group is an Indiegogo crowdfunding effort, and it is scheduled to end on Monday, April 8th, and right now they are very, very below what they need to start their museum. So if you'd like to learn more about their project or even contribute, we have links to their website and the Indiegogo campaign in the show notes.
It sounds like, you know, they have a good idea. I know there's no real evidence to put in any UFO museum, but you can at least get public awareness out there.
Well, exactly. And I think one of the things that they say that surprised me is they're trying to start this because there is evidently not a single serious UFO exhibit or museum in Europe. And they wanted something kind of akin to the museum in Roswell. Yeah. Okay. Just released this morning as we record a possible dark matter detection. A sensor on the International Space Station appears to have detected a particle that is thought to be connected with dark matter. The Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer detected a high number of antimatter particles, which are believed to indicate reactions caused by dark matter. The science is a bit complicated, but very exciting. So if you would like to check it out, follow the link to the Scientific American article in our show notes.
The report we had last week or the week before when they detected the universe was a little older than they thought. There was also some mention of dark matter in there. So, you know, possibly it does exist and possibly they will find it and possibly UFOs do exist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And this should be interesting for anybody who's looking into physics at all. And it's got, you know, the kind of the stuff of science fiction. Antimatter and dark matter. It's all in there. It is a tough read, but it's kind of interesting if you want to dive in. Maury Island UFO movie about to begin production. Seattle TV station KOMO recently ran a story on a new film being produced about the Maury Island incident, a very early UFO incident that was actually investigated by Kenneth Arnold. Through the link in our show notes, you can learn more about the movie and the permanent Maury Island incident display at the Northwest Museum of Legends and Lore. Now, Martin, I believe you're you have some interest in the Maury Island incident?
Well, it's always fascinated me. You know, it's something that happened 3 days before Arnold's sighting and before Roswell and all that, and donut-shaped crafts with one faltering and the others around it trying to help it out. It's a pretty fascinating thing. A boy gets injured, a dog gets killed from what actually drips out of this thing onto their boat. It's just seems like a high evidence case in general.
I believe there were also some Army or Air Force personnel who died en route to the end.
That's right.
And returning from the investigation, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You had actually just asked me to do a article on that for the website, and that will be coming up soon. It is not done yet, but everybody should be on the lookout for it.
Get to work, for God's sake. Come on.
I've been busy going to every forum on the internet explaining that Stan Friedman really did record that. Yeah. It really was him. Organic transistors may lead to living computers. A project detailed in the latest issue of Science has successfully created a transistor out of biological material. This opens up the possibility of creating organic computers in the near future. This new research may be of interest to UFO researchers investigating alleged alien implants as well. Read more about it through the link in our show notes.
This is the kind of thing that Ray Kurzweil was talking about. I don't know if you're familiar with who he is or not.
Yes.
Yeah. But he was talking about this thing, this type of thing happening like 25 years into the future. And it's just amazing how technology just seems to spin out of control almost.
Yeah, and I mean, there are real possibilities just for so many things with organic computers, medical, different kinds of scientists. It's very exciting.
Yeah, brainwashing people. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. Peter Robbins guest stars in podcast UFO forums. Our first UFO forum guest star, Peter Robbins, has now completed his run answering our members' questions. Over 3 days, he was able to make 33 posts in response to topics generated by our forum members. Martin has already scheduled 3 more guest stars, including Mac Maloney, Chris Lambright, and next up, Kathleen Martin. Please take a second to sign up for the forums if you have not already to get your chance to interact with these researchers.
Yes, Kathleen Martin is coming up on April 13th. For 4 days, and that'll be great. And I hope that the listener does check out the forum here because, you know, Peter Robbins really got into some of these topics, and there's some very, very lengthy and interesting things and a wonderful piece he wrote on Bud Hopkins. So that's a great read in itself. So check it out right on our website, which is podcastufo.com.
And finally, on behalf of Podcast UFO, I am taking a brief moment to point out that the tweets, website articles, and Stanton Friedman audio released by Podcast UFO on this past Monday were, of course, April Fool's Day jokes. We hope everyone enjoyed our attempts at humor and hope we didn't offend or upset anyone. Most of all, of course, we want to thank Stanton Friedman for making a great recording.
Yes, well, we did actually offend a few people, and I've tried to take care of that. Again, I apologize for anyone that got upset. You know, it was all intended for good fun, and there's still quite a bit of controversy out there about Stanton Friedman, that he's saying the truth with this, and I've tried to squelch all that by going into different forums and just piping up.
My favorite thing I think I saw in a forum was somebody saying, it doesn't even sound like Stanton Friedman.
Yes, that was awesome. That was awesome.
But it was.
That was great. Well, thank you, Michael. And that's it for the news, right?
Yes, that's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Have a great show.
Okay, I'm with Simon Sharman in the UK. Where are you located, Simon?
Yeah, hi, Martin. I'm up in the wet and windy north in Manchester.
Oh, in Manchester. Welcome to the show. Thanks for agreeing to come on.
Hey, it's my pleasure.
First of all, you are a TV producer. How did you get involved in UFOs to start with?
Well, that's a good question. It's been a long time. I'd probably have to blame it all on Timothy Good or perhaps Stanton Friedman. I don't know, you could take your pick out of those. I first heard Timothy Good back in, I think it was 1989 or 1990 on BBC Radio 2 here in the UK. And he was discussing, you know, cover-ups and alien bodies and the kind of stuff that is kind of commonplace now for a lot of people, in not just within ufology, but even anybody, really. And this was, of course, before the days of both the internet and the X-Files hadn't even aired at this point. So, you know, what he was saying was really, you know, really kind of revelatory stuff, and it really, I don't know, it seemed to strike a chord back then. I was 20 at the time, something like that. And I suppose it all started there. A few years later, by chance, I was doing some temporary work for the local government up in the north, just after I left university, and I managed to literally, by accident, stumble into a presentation or lecture given by your friend of the show, Stanton Friedman. And so I bumped into him, and I managed to have a conversation with him, and the rest, as they say, is kind of history.
Before we talk about your e-petition, I wanted to talk about the correspondence you had with an editor about an article that I read a few months ago that was saying basically the UFOs were dead. And let's talk about that.
Yeah, well, It was back in 2012, around November time, and it was actually the Sunday Telegraph that first published this article by a chap called Jasper Copping, who at the time was, or he may still be, in fact, the night editor of that publication. And basically, he set out this whole piece that was entitled UFO Enthusiasts Admit the Truth May Not Be Out There After All, and a subheading of declining numbers of flying saucer sightings and failure to establish proof of alien existence has led to UFO enthusiasts admitting they might not exist. And it was basically a massive debunking piece based upon a really ineffectual organisation called the ASAP that basically investigate things like ghosts, vampires and werewolves. You know, pretty insulting stuff.
In a pub, by the way, right?
Yeah, they had their meetings in a pub. This is it. I mean, look, I'm sure they're really nice people, and I certainly don't have anything against them per se. But my issue with the Telegraph was the fact that they were using this as evidence and the whole centrepiece as a way to basically say that, you know, UFOs, they're not really a problem anymore, and maybe we shouldn't bother with it. You know, it's absolute nonsense. So, yeah, it got me pretty wound up at the time.
And you had some correspondence with the editor, and I read the correspondence, and it looks like, you know, he seemed pleasant in his reply, but he sort of just ignored everything you said.
Yeah, that's pretty much the gist of it. It was quite interesting, actually, because I've worked in the media now for, you know, quite a few years. The whole experience is quite telling, I think. My email to him was quite comprehensive. I kind of picked him up on all the points that I had issues with, you know, the organisation he was using, the whole tone of the piece, etc. And the same day, and I do mean within, I think it was around, within 3 hours, maybe 2.5 hours, I actually had a reply from, now I actually responded initially to the editor of the Telegraph. I just thought, you know, I'll go straight to the top, who cares? But actually it was the sub-editor who replied, and he, as I say, responded within a couple of hours. And his response, which I later published on my blog, basically was a very clever put-down. You know, he was very polite, and he tried to touch on my points, but the bottom line was he just wasn't really interested and was very dismissive in his tone and the language that he used in terms of my issues. Mm-hmm. That were basically, you know, you're using an organisation that has absolutely no credibility within ufology whatsoever. You know, meeting in pubs, and I think their last UFO article was published in 2010, and it was a really basic piece, you know, on Roswell or something. I'm not sure what it was. So, you know, they kind of touched on it, but the bottom line was, he said, "Look, we believe it was justified. You know, thanks for getting in touch, etc., etc."
To find this, it's Truspiracy, truspiracy.blogspot.com. One thing that comes to mind is I want to ask you your final reply to the editor. Did he respond to that?
No, he absolutely did not. I must be honest, and anyone who reads the blog and my response will see, I did really take him to task and picked him up on every single issue I had with his issues. And, you know, I did it in such a way that really left him nowhere to go. And of course, I wasn't expecting a response. And needless to say, the wall of silence came back at me.
Right, right. What inspired you to start this e-petition? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I suppose it's been coming a long time, really. I mean, obviously in the States you have, you know, you have the whole Disclosure Project, and you also have Stephen Bassett and whatnot. And it occurred to me that there was nobody really here in the UK doing the same thing, and I just thought, why not? Well, I guess I've kind of found it out why, because clearly it's a thankless task and not an easy one. But yeah, I guess that's what started it. I mean, you know, we have the same thoughts on UFOs over here, or some of us do, that it is important, that it should be taken seriously. And I do get exceptionally frustrated with the fact that it still isn't spoken about in the media in a way that doesn't ridicule it. So I just got to a stage where I thought, well, no one else is doing it. I better do it myself.
Mm-hmm. And now this can only be signed by people who live in the UK.
Yeah, that's right. Unfortunately, it's got to be either UK citizens or essentially UK people from the UK living abroad potentially. But yeah, unfortunately, US citizens and other people around the world can't sign it, which is a real shame. And of course, I'm sure that's kind of how they set it up, so that, you know, ultimately it's quite prohibitive. And obviously, 100,000 signatures is a huge number.
Yes, and what is the amount of signatures needed actually to have them take this seriously?
Yeah, I mean, well, officially speaking, it's 100,000 signatures, which then means that there's essentially the necessity for parliamentary debate in the House of Commons on the topic. I would argue if I had a few, you know, tens of thousands, then I could still go and knock on number 10. I mean, I'll be honest with you, even if I only have 1,000 signatures by the end of 12 months, I'll still be knocking on number 10, whatever they want to say to me. I'm sure, you know, they won't be too keen on opening the door, but that's by the by.
Now, you mentioned earlier, basically, that some people take ufology serious, more or less, over there. In general, what are the thoughts in your area?
Yeah, if you'd asked this maybe 10 or 15 years ago, I think the answer you would have got, or I would be giving, would be entirely different from what I'm giving you now. I've absolutely seen a complete change of opinion, or a changing opinion, should I say, certainly in the UK, of people's attitudes towards the idea that UFOs may be something more than just natural phenomena. Okay, the X-Files and things like that back in the 90s certainly helped a lot. But even up until 5 or up until 10 years ago, I think speaking about this subject was still kind of socially risky. You know, you could potentially lose a few friends with brains along the way that just think, okay, well, you know, if this is your thing, then I'll leave you and get on with it. And I'd say it's only the last few years that people have started to be less hostile towards the notion. And I think that's partly due to, I think, people generally opening their minds, perhaps. Technology, of course, and information in terms of space. You know, we're finding exoplanets all the time, as
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to say, sorry, just to try and give a more succinct answer, that, you know, a few years ago, you know, the NASA's and all the scientists, the astrophysicists saying, well, life's a rare thing and it's kind of probably hardly anywhere. You know, now you can't turn on the news or your Google without something popping up saying they found another planet. The chances are life is kind of everywhere. In fact, now on Mars, they've found microbes and it could have supported ancient life. You know, this story's changing all the time. And I think this slowly does affect people's thoughts on the possibility that UFOs may be something that they first thought they couldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are the sightings like in Manchester?
Pretty bad, because it rains all the time.
They stay away from there.
You look, we can't even see our nearest star from Manchester here. You know, we don't see the sun. There's not much chance of seeing UFOs. But, you know, having said that, we are just underneath, right next to what is famously called UFO Alley over here, which is a section between Lancashire and Yorkshire, the kind of Rossendale area, where some, you know, famous sightings happen with Timothy Dodd and people like that over the years. And, you know, we also had a couple of sightings over Salford the last 2 or 3 years. So, yeah, there are sightings up here like anywhere, really. It's just that the clouds seem to do a good job of hiding most of them.
Mm. Getting back to being a television producer, are you attempting to do any films or any documentaries on UFOs?
Without a doubt. I've been banging my head on this wall for a few years as well. I mean, I used to make a lot of mainstream television here in the UK, including stuff for the BBC and independent news channels.
Wow.
And so it's something I do have experience of in terms of factual programming, but I don't think the media like to treat UFOs as factual programming. It's one of those things, you know. I mean, obviously, I know the Discovery over there, you guys produce a lot of that more sensational stuff. But it's interesting. I mean, even just today, I tried to get some coverage on an ITV morning show here, a daytime show called This Morning, that last week just had a week of the paranormal, shall we say, and had, well, some pretty ludicrous items on there, if I'm honest with you. But they did have also David Icke on there, giving an interview as well, which, you know, everybody's got an opinion on, of course. So I had the idea that it would be, you know, only fair for the viewers to see the other side of the coin and see a more balanced point of view on the whole UFO topic. I actually spoke with the forward planning desk today about my petition. And, well, the answer I got back, I'm going to give the full answer because it's going to take this kind of amount of time to say in my blog, but essentially, the answer I got was something like, well, we tend to like to go with people who say they've been abducted by aliens, or people who've made, like our last guest, people who think she's been abducted and basically had sex on a bus with an alien. I mean, it was just, you know, I've got to say, it was really kind of insulting. So my end was, well, obviously then, you know, you want to take the line of ridiculing it like all the other outlets. And of course, the conversation was pretty quickly ended. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that you're faced with. I am taking some more feature-length documentary ideas to different channels. But Martin, it's really, really difficult. You know, they just don't want to listen.
Mm-hmm. You said something about thankless, or I believe you did. You know, I hear that from a lot of people that are trying to move ahead with either filming or something like that. It's hard to get funding. A lot of shows do not make any money, or very little of them do. There's not a lot of an incentive for this.
There's absolutely no incentive for an individual to take this on, let me tell you. But commercially speaking, I mean, obviously, these commercial models that the broadcasters have, this kind of program in essence actually would be fairly relatively inexpensive to make. You're talking a lot of talking head interviews or location shooting, which, you know, we're not looking at lots of fancy effects or exotic locations. But it's just the topic, Martin. They just don't want to touch the topic. Unless it's done in a sensationalist way or a way that kind of derises the seriousness. They do not want to look at it in any way that raises the bar, which is the whole point of my petition, really. You know, whether or not I get the signatures that I want, the whole point of what I'm trying to do is raise the level of conversation that people have with this subject. Because when I speak to people that I know in the industry, whether in the TV industry, you know, producers or other professionals, you know, they're very open to having the discussion about it. And people are very open to the idea of, well, you know, what do you know? What could do you think it could be? So people, in terms of the general population, they are interested. And this is what I find really frustrating, because if a channel or a show out there just took the plunge and were brave enough to just hit it head on or take it head on, then, you know, they could have a hit film or a hit show or a hit series on their hands, because there are people out there that care enough and that are interested enough to know something more than someone who thinks they've been, you know, abducted. And I'm not belittling that, because I know the abduction phenomenon is a very real thing for very many people. But I'm talking about the more sensationalist and you know, less serious end. Mm-hmm. It's a frustrating task, but hey, somebody's got to do it.
Now, I know Nick Pope now lives in the United States, and I've tried to reach him actually for a podcast, and he did respond to me, but it says he's very, very busy. How does the UK in general, people that you know, actually view Nick Pope's work?
I think mostly they are of the same opinion that, you know, people like Nick Pope, and I've got to say, I've not met Mr. Pope, so I don't know him personally. But I guess it's pretty obvious that, you know, there are a certain bunch of characters in this field that are really, they're probably more interested in self-promotion and notoriety than pushing the debate forward. And that's certainly something I would like to absolutely distance myself from. You know, I mean, I'm doing a tour around the UK. I'm going to do a few locations with my campaign. I won't be charging a penny for anybody who comes to see me. Not that they may want to pay money to see me. But, you know, the principle, I think, is important. You know, there's an important discussion here to be had. And, OK, everybody's got to make a living, and I don't deny anybody that. But there's ways and means of how you do it. And for me... some people and the way Nick Pope conducts his own affairs, which is his business, is certainly not the way I would do it myself.
Okay, fair enough. So continuing on here, let's talk about your views of the underbelly of ufology.
Sure, I think this is one really fascinating side of our subject that rarely gets looked at in a way that sheds any light on what's going on. What I mean by that is there are lots and lots of interesting characters within ufology. And a lot of people outside of the topic would say, you know, let's be honest, there are a lot of head cases involved, to put it bluntly. But the head cases aside, in terms of the serious investigators, researchers, characters, authors, filmmakers, gurus, I mean, there's a whole world there of politics, egos, money, people vying for position that it's kind of like its own micro industry that, you'll see in any other industry, whether it's in banking or goodness knows what profession, where you've got all these characters kind of fighting it out, trying to outdo each other, outsay each other, outconference each other, you know. And I've got to say, this aspect of the whole subject really does leave me cold. You know, for me, I'm doing this tour, Truthspiracy, which, you know, I'm hoping people will come and see and hear me speak, but only insofar as it will help them become more aware of the subject in general and hopefully sign my petition. I'm not interested in taking money from them. I'm not interested in any notoriety from doing it. You know, I wouldn't get any anyway. It's a ridiculous challenge to upset myself. But, you know, within ufology, you do have all of these various factions of characters, very strong characters, obviously, and rightly so, I guess, to take on this kind of stuff. But with it does come a lot of baggage, I think, which doesn't help the subject in general. You know, you at the one end of the scale, you have the conferences that, you know, or the, you know, we call them conferences. I'm talking, and Martin, I'm sure you know what I mean by this. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about two or three people speaking to a room of about five or six people, up to the other extreme. And maybe in the States it's different. I don't know, maybe you don't have such low numbers, but you've got the other extreme, of course, where you've got the real big characters mentioning no particular names, some of which, of course, very reputable, been doing it a long time. They know their stuff. You know, Stanton Friedman, a particular hero of my own, and one of the people that really got me interested in the first place. And then you've got, like, even more extremes than that, people who just really want to pack the numbers in and maybe more bothered about the dollar than the content. So, you know, it's a really complicated, interesting, vibrant kind of, I wouldn't want to call it industry, really. What should we call it? I don't even know what. You see, we don't even have words to That's describe right. what it is we do. This is the problem. It's like we don't have a status in society that I can even describe what we do with. It's kind of, it's frustrating, it's weird. Publicly speaking, we have no status or status, which, again, is something. And I know, I'm sure, you know, I'm the last in the line of a whole bunch of much greater individuals than me that have tried to change that before now. But I think that's what I'm about. I think it's, for me, if I can make any difference in helping to change that lack of status within the public's eye, then maybe I've done something worthwhile.
Let's say the petition gets a lot of interest, and let's say that Parliament would take it seriously. Had a disclosure, what do you think would happen?
I don't think much would actually change, in all honesty. It's a strange thing to say, but I've thought about this a lot, as you can imagine, as maybe you have, I don't know, maybe 20 years I've thought about this kind of thing. My honest thought is that people wouldn't really bat much of an eyelid, as we say here in the UK. Yeah, okay, it'd be like, wow, you know, really? And people would be glued around the TV for 24, 48 hours, and there'd be some spin-off shows and some great reality, you know, hanging out with the Greys and all that. But after it all died down, you know what, people just get on. They carry on with their jobs, watching daytime TV. And I honestly think that people are much more capable of adapting than this notion that I know a lot of conspiracy theories or other people may put out that, oh, you know, the world would collapse or, you know, society would break down. In fact, I think that is a conspiracy theory put out by the establishment, if I'm really honest. This nonsense mm-hmm. that, in fact, people would just fall apart psychologically, philosophically, religion would collapse. I just think this is nonsense, quite frankly.
I agree 100% with everything you just said there. And I think what we talked about earlier, as far as, you know, the Kepler is finding more and more suitable planets, I think within a few years we're going to learn that there is life out there in some manner of speaking. So I think it'll all be accepted well, and I think this is the time for it. I think, you know, earlier times it would have been possibly a mistake, and everything you just mentioned may have happened, the falling apart of society in certain areas. But anyway, thank you so much for your insight. I salute you for what you're doing and hope it goes well with you over in the UK.
Well, Martin, it's been a real pleasure, and thanks so much for having me on.
Bye.